Okay, so thanks for coming last night. If you weren't able to come, the stuff's online. I hope you've had a chance to look at it. So I said we'd study the mechanism of what looks like a pretty complicated reaction, what's so-called oxidation of ammonia by chlorine. And lots of things happen, as you'll see. But let's start out by looking at what makes these things reactive. What makes NH3 reactive? Where does it have an unusually high HOMO or an unusually low LUMO? Alex? Let's think what kinds of things make for an unusually high HOMO or an unusually low LUMO. There were four things. Can anybody remember one of them? Lauren? If you have atomic orbitals that haven't mixed with anything, so they haven't gone up and down, that's one. What's another one? Right, the thing that makes normal orbitals is hydrogen and carbon, or two carbons come together, they're about the same energy. When they overlap, they go way up and way down. So you have occupied and vacant. Those are normal, highest occupied and lowest vacant orbitals. One thing that makes abnormal is to have atoms that didn't mix with anything, so they didn't go up and down. So even if they have a somewhat different nuclear charge, as long as it's not too drastically different, they may go up and down a little bit, but not the amount you got when you put a pair together. Okay, so one thing is when you have atoms that haven't mixed with anything, right? Like an unshared pair of electrons, right? So that'll be unusually high. What would be the analog of an unusually low orbital? Some orbital that hasn't mixed with anything and has no electrons in it. Anybody think of an example? BH3, the p orbital of boron. That's the analog of the NH3 unshared pair. Okay, so you can have no overlap at all. That's those cases. What's the next example? Kate? Yeah, you can have poor overlap, things that didn't go so far up and down. And what would be an example of that? How can you have poor overlap? What if you have two atoms here, they at a certain distance, they overlap. What makes them overlap well? Having orbitals that do this, right? That's what overlap is. How can you make it smaller? Have orbitals that are coming together side by side, p orbitals. That's not such good overlap. So they don't go very. So the bonding orbital doesn't go down so far. The antibonding doesn't go up so far. So you have unusually high occupied and unusually low vacant when you have a double bond. What's the next thing that can make things unusual compared to carbon-hydrogen bonds and antibonds? Electric charge, sure. If you have something that's a positive charge, that makes all the orbitals in the vicinity low. Good place to have electrons. If you have a negative charge, the contrary. Notice, incidentally, that the negative charge really involves electron-electron repulsion, which we often sort of sweep under the rug, but obviously it's going to be a factor if you have a negative charge. And there's one more you haven't mentioned. Lean? Yeah, that you're using an atom that isn't like carbon and hydrogen. Something that has a bigger nuclear charge, so the energies are low. That would mean low vacant orbitals. Or even though they mix, right? Here, carbon and carbon, or carbon and hydrogen. But if you use something like a big nuclear charge like a halogen, then they don't mix very much, right? So the low vacant, the vacant orbital, the occupied orbital is not unusually high, but the vacant orbital is unusually low. What's the analog of something that would give a low vacant orbital because of that? Here's carbon-carbon. What do we need to do? We need to raise one. How can you do that? Have a lower nuclear charge. What's an example of that? A metal, or say lithium, something like that. Okay. Now these mix, but not so much because of the energy mismatch. So there's nothing special about the vacant orbital, but the occupied orbital is unusually high if you started high. Okay, so those are the things that do it. Now back to you, Alex. So what's unusual about this compared to regular old carbon hydrogen kinds of things? Any idea? No, Laura?
It has unmixed electrons.
Right, it has the unshared pair on nitrogen. So here's an unusually high HOMO. Now, does chlorine have any unshared pairs? Connor? Pardon me? I couldn't hear.
Yes.
Yes, lots. Are they unusually high? Say, compared to the ones we're talking about on nitrogen? Why not? Because chlorine's off to the right. It's got a big nuclear charge, right? Pulling electrons down. So these the unshared pairs on chlorine, Cl2, don't make it unusually reactive. What would make it unusually reactive, Connor? What's unusual about Cl2 compared to carbon-carbon bonds? There's a Cl-Cl bond here. What's unusual? Yeah. Can't hear. It is covalent, so it's about, you know, two chlorine atoms come together, they form a bond. Two carbon atoms come together, they form a bond. When they form a bond, an orbital goes up, an orbital goes down. So two carbons come together, they form a high HOMO. They form a HOMO, but not unusually high, and a LUMO, not unusually low. It's our definition of normal. How is it going to be different when we take two chlorines? Yeah? So they're going to start down here with a higher nuclear charge. They'll come together and overlap, go high and low, which is unusual compared to carbon. The low LUMO. And what is the low LUMO? Can you name it? Can you give it a name, what this low LUMO is? Yeah, it's the antibonding combination. It's sigma. It's a normal old bond, sigma star. The vacant one, antibonding. Okay, so we've done it. What's the high HOMO? Alex, tell me now. Unshared pair on NH3. Sometimes you denote unshared pairs as N. I actually don't know why it's called N for unshared pairs. It's not because of nitrogen, but it's what, maybe because it's un. Okay. Okay, what's the low LUMO? Leon? Can't hear. Sigma star of chlorine. Okay? So the NH3 unshared pair will mix with the sigma star. Where will it approach in order to mix? Well, sigma star has a node here. Right? It's, say, plus on this side, minus on this side. If you want to have the best overlap, you've got to get where the plus is and away from where the minus is, or the opposite signs, right? So you'll approach from here. Okay, so these electrons will make a new bond. We make a bond, and at the same time, by putting electrons into the antibond, we weaken the attraction between the two chlorines, so that bond will break, and these electrons go onto the chlorine, and we form a nitrogen-chlorine bond. And that's going to be plus, because when we have a fourth bond to nitrogen, the nitrogen is plus, because it gave up half interest in its electron pair. And the chlorine, of course, getting these electrons will be minus, and we have one of the products now. That one, chloride. Okay? But we also have this thing, and we're going to want to react it. Okay? Further. Okay, so we've got that one. Now, what do we have in terms of a unusually high HOMO or unusually low LUMO for this thing? Yeah. Right, we're going to have low energy. It's clearly going to be a low LUMO. You know, just glancing at it with a blink would tell you that this is not going to be a high HOMO situation, but a low LUMO. What would you see in just in a blink? The plus charge. It's a good place to put. And what's the name of the orbital that would be unusually low? If it's going to be a particular orbital? It's the same as before. Right? It's sigma star. You know, all the orbitals here are sigma. All the pairwise orbitals are sigma. They're sigma NH, sigma NCl, and they're three sigma NHs. Right? Now, which is the lowest? NH or NCl, which is going to have a lower vacant orbital? NH or NCl? Carl?
NCl.
Why? Right. Cl starts lower than hydrogen, so the lowest vacant orbital, the pairwise orbital, will be NCl. So that's the one we're going to react. Yeah.
But it's bonding with nitrogen.
It's bonding with nitrogen. Yeah. It's the antibonding orbital between nitrogen and chlorine, the same as this was the antibonding orbital between chlorine and chlorine. Okay.
Nitrogen starts lower than hydrogen.
Yeah. Both these start. This doesn't start as low as chlorine did, except for the fact that it's got this positive charge. Right, so there'll be an unusually low LUMO, and it'll involve N and Cl. Okay, so that's the bond we're going to break. We're going to attack and put electrons in that antibonding orbital. Where are the electrons going to come from? What's the high HOMO going to be? This is the stuff we're reacting here. Right, we got another one of these. So the low LUMO is that one. Right. Now, notice incidentally, you could attack either, the NCl is lower, but you could also attack the NH. But notice that if you attacked the NH, the high HOMO is, okay, there are three of these, right? So we've got another one to do it. So now, this could attack either the H and break that bond, or it could attack the Cl and break this bond, or it could attack the N and break this bond, or in principle it could attack the N and break this bond. Okay, so this high HOMO will attack one of these. The lowest LUMO is NCl, right? But in fact, if you did that, if you attacked this unshared pair on that Cl, what would the product be? You'd attack the Cl, make a new bond there, and break that bond. What would the product be? Can anybody see? Yeah, Elisa? Pardon me? It would be the same thing. You'd have NH3Cl and NH3, right? So it probably happens, right? Or it could happen anyhow. But if it happens, it doesn't make any difference, so forget it. Okay, but if it attacked the H, that's going to be a different idea. So if we do that, then we get NH4+, and NH2Cl. Is everybody with me still? All these are you make a bond and break a bond by putting electrons into an antibonding orbital. Okay, but now I wrote that in blue because we've got another one of the products. Right? We've now got the ammonium chloride. Okay? So now we can bring this thing down and react again with it. What's the low LUMO going to be? Ellen? Of this thing here? NCl, right? Both of them start low, so you're going to have an unusually low LUMO. So you're going to attack the NCl bond. Okay, sigma star NCl. What's a high HOMO? Ellen, can you help us again? NH? What makes for a high HOMO? Just a second. NH, let's think about NH. Compared to what? Compared with CH. Okay, here's CH, like that. Here's the HOMO. NH starts down here for the N, still lower. So it's not a high HOMO compared to CH. Anybody else got an idea for a high HOMO? Yeah? Pardon me? Yeah, we got three of those up there, right? So we can do this again. So now, this could attack the chlorine, or it could attack the nitrogen. That, incidentally, is this vacant orbital, the NCl vacant orbital, is it bigger on chlorine, or is it bigger on nitrogen? Think about it. Here we had chlorine lower than nitrogen, right? We put them together and get an occupied orbital, which is very low, and a vacant orbital, which is also low. That's the one we're interested in, the vacant orbital. Nitrogen and chlorine came together and gave this, and this is the one we're interested in. Which one is it big on? Pardon me? Why do you say so? Right. So the best one is closer to the low one, the HOMO, the occupied orbital, and the LUMO is closer to nitrogen. It'll be big on nitrogen. So if you're going to go for big overlap, it's going to go for the nitrogen. Furthermore, if you attacked the chlorine, right, and broke this bond, those electrons would go onto nitrogen, and you get NH2 minus. Okay? But if you attack here, like that, then you get Cl minus. Which would you rather get? Cl minus or NH2 minus? Cl minus is a familiar anion, right? Because the high nuclear charge makes those electrons stable. Okay, so that's the way it goes. And now you get a nitrogen-nitrogen bond formed. So it's NH2 bond NH3 plus and chloride, and that's the other product. Right? So notice we did the same reaction really three times, right? A high HOMO on nitrogen reacts with a low LUMO. It makes a new bond and breaks a bond, right? But we attacked three different atoms. Here you attacked chlorine, here you attacked hydrogen, here you attacked nitrogen, right? So three cycles of making a bond and breaking it at the same time, and the NH3s successively attack chlorine, then hydrogen, then nitrogen. Right? So it's actually a pretty complicated, it looks like a pretty complicated set of reactions, but in fact it's just the same reaction three times. And all you have to do is to be able to identify, which you did here, which is the HOMO and which is the LUMO. Okay, now, four functional groups we're going to look at for the rest of this stuff about orbitals. We're going to look first at the carbonyl group, then amide, then carboxylic acid, and finally alkyl lithium. All right? And then we're going to completely change what we're doing. And we're going to see how chemistry really developed rather than using quantum mechanics to figure things out. Okay? Now, what we're doing here with these four functional groups, this kind of functional group analysis, is really what we've been aiming for almost half the semester now. That's why we did the quantum mechanics. Now, last year's class at this time divided up and in groups of two or three, they took a functional group. We had a list of 25 functional groups, and each set of people then analyzed one of these. What's the HOMOs? What's the LUMOs? Which should make it, should it be very reactive, and in what way? That kind of thing, right? The same kind of thing that we've just been doing and that we will be doing with these four functional groups here. So this year you don't have to do that. That's the good news. The bad news is that you're responsible for what these guys wrote last year. They're not necessarily correct, right? So you can't just read it and memorize it. You have to think about what they wrote. Does it make sense? Okay, and then on the exam, you'll have to do this for one or two functional groups. Okay? So what's the practical way to prepare for this? I think it would be to look at these wikis, but there may be too much for you to do alone. So get in little groups, parcel out, you look at these, you look at these, what do you think, explain it to me, and I'll explain to you, and so on. Okay, does that sound like a strategy? And you can do it in the discussion groups too. Okay, so as an example of what you're going to do for the rest of this lecture, we're going to look at some of these functional groups, and maybe it'll go over a little bit into the next lecture. So the carbonyl group. Now, the C double bond O. This is probably the most important functional group in organic chemistry. It's really neat and surprising that it's both strong and reactive. You might think that if a bond is particularly strong and therefore low in energy and stable, that it should be unreactive. But in fact, the carbonyl group is strong and a good thing to make, but it's also very reactive. Doesn't that seem funny? But it's true, and we'll see why. Okay? And that's why it's so important. Okay, so we could take the simplest carbonyl compound, formaldehyde, with its six valence pairs, and look at the molecular orbitals that they get put into. So these are these plum pudding orbitals. The lowest one is a 2s orbital. Then what's this one, would you say? If you, as a plum pudding, as an atom analog, what orbital is that? That's a 2p orbital. What's this one? Plus in front, minus in back. That's the 2p that goes into the board. And what's this one here? The 2p that goes up and down, right? 2px, 2py, 2pz. What's this one? It's got a node around the middle. So that's 3s, right? And finally, this one up here, which is plus, minus, plus, minus. What kind of atomic orbital is that? It's a d orbital. It's a dxy. Okay, but now that's one way of looking at it if you're a computer, right? But another way of looking at it is to look for these pairwise interactions to see what the local homos and lumos are. So let's just let's do a little bit of this pairwise mixing analysis to see what two things went together to give some of these. Okay, so let's look at that one. And here's a different picture drawn at a different contour level of the same thing. It's a little bigger and for our purposes maybe easier to analyze. Maybe not. They'll show the same properties. Okay, that's the HOMO. But just for interest, let's compare that with the 2PY, which is neither HOMO nor LUMO. It's just an occupied molecular orbital. But let's compare those two. Because what you'll see is that they're made out of the same pieces. Okay. Now notice that both of them have that node. Right. Now is that an anti-bonding node? Does that make things repel one another? Aisha? What is it? It's an atomic orbital node of this atomic orbital. Right? Or of this atomic orbital, or of this atomic orbital. Those are p orbitals that go in and out of the board the same way this goes in and out of the board. Right? But the one on the top, so those are atomic orbital nodes, not anti-bonding nodes, right? But the top one has an anti-bonding node. So you see that this pair of orbitals was made by, from the same two pieces, adding them together or subtracting them. So here they reinforce in the middle. The one in the front, the p orbital on oxygen, reinforces with this CH bond or partly a p orbital on carbon. Whereas here, they have opposite signs, right? So it's anti-bonding there. Everybody with me? Ask a question if it's not clear, because this is really important. So we took these two. This is a pairwise analysis. The pair on the left is an atomic orbital, but on the right, it's actually two CH bonds, right? So we took these two CH bonds and the atomic orbital on oxygen, and we either added them together or subtracted the one from the other to get an extra node.
If we didn't have like the pictures from the computer, would there be a way to like tell that it's like the same thing but one has an anti-bonding node?
If you had only what? That this one doesn't have it, because as you go from left to right here, it's all the same sign. Right? When you go across a node, you change signs. This does have a node when you go from front to back, but it doesn't have a node when you go from left to right. So this has one node, this has two nodes. But the crucial thing is that the pink node goes through the bond. Okay, so it's when they go through a bond that they're anti-bonding, right? The blue one doesn't go through a bond. You have the CH bond in front, it doesn't go through that. The CH bond in back doesn't go through that. And it doesn't go through this CO bond either. But this pink one goes through the CO bond, okay? Okay, so this is the sum and the difference. The sum below, the difference above of oxygen and CH. Two CHs, actually. Okay. Now, let's ask the question we asked last night. Which of the two orbitals is higher? The 2P of oxygen or the sigma CH of carbon? Oxygen obviously starts lower because of the higher nuclear charge than either C or H. But C and H mix together. Right, that's low because of its nuclear charge. That's low because of overlap. Right, there's C and H, but the C and H overlap. So now here's the sigma CH. Here's the oxygen. I've drawn it so that CH is lower than oxygen, but I might be wrong. It might be that oxygen should be lower than CH. Can you look at these and tell which is higher? This is the best combination of O with CH. This is the less good combination of O with CH. I show you, sir. Why? Right. It's the same question you answered before. Right? The antibonding one will be big on the higher energy. The bonding one will be big on the lower energy one. Right? So clearly, there's not much oxygen in this. So this CH is much lower than oxygen. Okay. So when these two get together, right, the favorable combination, that is this one, is much more CH-like. And the unfavorable combination, this one, is much more O-like. Big on O, small on CH. Okay, so 2PO must be much greater than sigma CH. Right? It's not so grossly different that you don't have any O here. I mean, invisible, or you don't have any of the H here. But still, it's obviously much higher in energy, the O, than the CH. Right? Bear in mind, we did the same thing last night with F and CH, and saw that F was a little higher than CH. If F's a little higher, then oxygen must be much higher. Okay. F was actually rather comparable with CH. You had to look carefully to see. But now, of course, we're going to be particularly interested in the not only in the HOMO, which we were just looking at, which you see is mostly the HOMO is an unshared pair on oxygen. Right? That's what it mostly is. Okay. But the LUMO is this thing. Can you think of a name for that orbital? Do you see what it's made of? Mariana, what are the pieces? What are the two atomic orbitals that went into this? Can you see from that picture? What's on the left here? Which this is oxygen, that's carbon. So the one on the left, which atom is it on? On oxygen. And which orbital is it? Which atomic orbital is it pretty much like of oxygen? S, P, D. Yeah, it's mostly a P orbital going up and down. Okay? And now, here, you see that P orbital on oxygen going up and down. And it's overlapping with some orbital on the right. What is the one on the right, the atomic orbital? Mariana? Or look at it up here, right? What's the one on the right? I can't hear very well. It's the P orbital on carbon. So this two side-by-side P orbitals are coming together, one on oxygen and one on carbon, right? And this is their favorable combination, where they reinforce in the middle in the bonding region. And this is their antibonding combination. So do you remember what you call it when two P orbitals come together side-by-side? What do you call that kind of orbital? Pi. And what would you call this one up here? Pi star. It's the antibonding one. Okay. So that's an unusually low orbital. Why unusually low? Right? Because the overlap is bad, and because it's a CO bond. The oxygen started low, so the LUMO is going to be very low. Okay, now, so let's look at that one. And here's another picture of it. Now you see it has a node there. Is that an antibonding node? No, that's just the node that belongs to these two atomic orbitals before they came together at all. So that's an atomic orbital node. But here, between them, is the antibonding node. Okay? Okay, so there's poor overlap, it's pi star, and poor energy match. Oxygen was much lower than carbon. So in the antibonding orbital, it's big on carbon. The bonding orbital is bigger on oxygen. Now, I think I have a slide in here that looks at that, because if you look at this, it doesn't look like it's bigger. The favorable one should be big on oxygen and small on carbon, and it doesn't really look that way. Right? And we'll address that shortly. This one, in fact, is 45% on oxygen and 55% on carbon. So clearly, it is big on carbon. Right? Now, if you look at the bonding orbital here, right, it looks like it's about the same on oxygen and carbon. In fact, I could be convinced that this looks a little smaller on oxygen than on carbon. It should be the other way around. Right? It's actually 55% on oxygen and 45% on carbon, the flip side of what we saw on the other one, right? But why does it look small on oxygen and look larger on carbon? It depends on what contour you drew. Oxygen, the electrons that are on oxygen are held closer than the electrons that are on carbon, right? So it's going to look small on oxygen, even if there are a lot of electrons there, because it's held more closely. And the way we can see that is to draw different contours. So that's at 0.003 electrons per cubic Bohr radius. There's 0.01, 0.03, we're going to higher density, 0.1. And now you see that when you go to high density, you can see that it's much bigger on oxygen. So that's why it was confusing to us when we looked at a low electron density. And even though it's more electrons on oxygen, it looked like it was bigger on carbon, because carbon, it stretches out more. Okay, so oxygen holds its electrons more closely than carbon does. The van der Waals radius of oxygen is 1.5 angstroms, whereas it's 1.7 for carbon. This, incidentally, is a lone pair on oxygen mostly. It's this p orbital on oxygen. So it's like an unshared pair, although it's mixed with the CH. So this is oxygen. Remember, if it makes two bonds, also has two lone pairs, right? This is one of the lone pairs. The other one is the one we already looked at that goes in and out of the plane, the HOMO. Okay, there's a little bit of CH bonding in this too, but mostly it's a p-rich hybrid orbital on oxygen. Right, so it's a lone pair on oxygen and some CO bonding. And notice that there are nodes through the nuclei, not between the atoms. This is a bonding combination. There's a node here that goes through the oxygen. There's a node here, but it goes through the carbon. So those are atomic orbital nodes, not antibonding. Okay, now, if you were a nucleophile, if you were something that had high energy electrons, a high HOMO that you wanted to be stabilized, which way would you approach this LUMO, pi star, in order to get good overlap? From what direction? For example, you can come from this direction, you can come from this direction, you can come from that direction. Would those be good ways to come from to get overlap? Chris?
Probably not, considering as much as you overlap one, you overlap the opposite.
Right. If you came in from here with your orbital, right, you'd get opposite signs of overlap, top and bottom. It would be orthogonal. The same if you came in from here. The same if you came in from here, you're overlapping with two different signs. Right? That's not good. Okay, so those are bad. Okay. Now you could come in here or you could come in here. Which of those would be better? Left or right? Megan?
Left.
Why? Yeah, it was a 50-50 one so far. You haven't convinced me that you understand. Why left? What do you want to do as you come in? Overlap.
There are more electrons on the left.
Yeah, it's the orbital's bigger on the left. The numbers are bigger in space. Right, so you get bigger overlap if you come in on the left. Now, so we won't want that one. Now, is this the best way to approach, the best angle. One, you could come in at 12 o'clock, you know, right? 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Which direction should you come in? You want to overlap with this one, but from what direction should you come? 1 o'clock. Maybe 10 o'clock, okay. Now, we just said this, that you'd rather approach carbon than oxygen. And another reason to do that, other than that it's bigger here, is that then you're going to put you're going to break the double bond and electrons are going to go out. Here they would go on to oxygen. Here those electrons would go on to carbon. Oxygen's a better place to put electrons than carbon. Why? Because it has a bigger nuclear charge. Okay, so by both tokens, where it's big and where the charge is going, you want to attack the carbon. But, as Megan tells us, now until the 1980s, so when I was like you, and when I was teaching people like you for 15 years already, everybody just assumed that it came straight down. But Megan tells us it should come in at 10 o'clock. Why? Right, it's further away from where it's negative here. You want to come in from this kind of angle. Right, not from there, but from there to get the best overlap. Now, is that true? Right, there are the nodes. You want to be as far as you can from the nodes to where you're going to get good overlap, all the same sign. Okay, now, it's possible to do an experiment. For this purpose, I've rotated it like that so that it'll match up with a diagram from a paper that was published in 1983 by Bürgi and Dunitz in Switzerland. And what they did was look at the structure of 14 different crystals. They're labeled from A to O. And all of these crystals are ones that had a nitrogen with its high HOMO someplace in the vicinity of a C double bond O, right? Now the rest of the structure of these molecules held them apart, so it couldn't come in and actually form a bond, but it could get close. Okay, so now the assumption is that it'll get close in a direction which gives the best overlap. So you'll be able, or that would be the same path it would follow if it could keep on going and make a bond. So they looked at all of these, and then they plotted them all on the same graph. And the way they plotted them is this. They put the carbon here. So all the molecules they rotated, all the crystal structures they rotated, so the carbon would be here. And so the oxygen would be along this line. Now, it could be different distances along that line, but at least the oxygen is along that line, right? And then they fixed it so the nitrogen that's coming in would be in this plane. So once you've done that, then you've, right, it takes three things to orient something. Where the center is, what direction one bond points, and then you still have the freedom of rotating it that around that. But if you put the nitrogen in the plane, then you got the thing fixed. Okay, so the nitrogens are all in these different structures are all up in here. The carbons are all on exactly the same point. The oxygens are all on this line. And then, of course, there are two other things attached to the carbon. One's coming out toward you. One's going back in. And that's there, the R group, whatever it is. And there's one in front and another one behind. Okay, so it's clear how they oriented all these different structures. They put them all on top of one another. And then they looked at how they changed from one structure to another. So so here's the nitrogen, here's the carbon, here's the oxygen, here's the R group. Now, in compound number G, there were a lot of A through F are all up in here. But then these are interesting. Here's G, so the nitrogen's getting a little bit closer. So here's where the oxygen is in G. The carbon is always on the same place. But notice the R isn't in the plane anymore. The R in front and the R behind are bent down a little bit. Why should they be bent down a little bit? Everybody see what I'm talking about? That they're not in the same plane? That the carbon, the oxygen, and these two R's, one in front and one behind, are not in the same plane. I'll ask Carl?
Isn't that the electrons from the nitrogen?
Yeah, the nitrogen electrons are beginning very weakly to form a bond. And as you form a bond and break the double bond, right, these things will bend back to go toward a tetrahedral carbon, and watch how it continues. There's G, there's H, there's I, there's compound K, and there's compound L. So these are like frames from a movie that show the amine attacking the carbonyl group. But they're all experimental. They all come from X-ray structures. Okay. So there, as the nitrogen comes in, the R's bend down, and the oxygen moves away down to the right, because you break the double bond as you form this new single bond. But none of these have gotten the nitrogen close enough to be a bond. Isn't that cute? So this angle that the nitrogen approaches at here is about 110 degrees, and it's called the Burgi-Dunitz angle because they did this experiment to find it out. And as you can see, if Megan had been around in 1980, she'd have said, "I told you so," right? She knew what the Burgi-Dunitz angle would be. Born too late. Okay, so that's the carbonyl. We've done it. And now the amide. The amide is arguably the most important. The carbonyl may be the most important in chemistry, organic chemistry. Of course, there's a carbonyl group in an amide. But the amide is almost certainly the most important for biology. Okay? And then after this, we'll have the complete change of perspective after we get through all these. Okay, so now, an interesting thing that comes up in amide is the idea of resonance, which is intramolecular homo-lumo mixing. Right? So here's the amide group, a carbonyl amine. But it's not an amine and a ketone. It's its own group, amide. Why? Why is this looks like an amine with its unshared pair? This looks like a carbonyl, C double bond O that we just looked at. But it's not that. It's different. Why? This would be a carbonyl amine, but this is an amide, this resonance structure. Right? Where you'll notice what happened is this has a homo and this has a lumo that we associate with the amine and with the carbonyl group, but they're in the same molecule. And they overlap, or at least they can overlap. We looked last night at a case, BH3, where there was a high homo and a low lumo in the same molecule, but they were orthogonal. They couldn't overlap. But in this case, they can overlap. And when they overlap, these electrons shift partly into the vacant orbital here, as we can see in the resonance structures. Right, to give rise to this structure with a double bond here and a negative charge on the oxygen. So resonance is in fact a make and break thing, just the kind of reaction we've been looking at, right? But it's not a reaction really, it's just a correction to our naive initial drawing. If we drew it as a carbonyl amine, we should have taken into account that this kind of thing could happen. So it was our mistake that can be corrected in a way by making and breaking a bond. Okay? So that on the left is the naive prediction, and on the right is the experimental observation. And here we'll see some of them. The naive prediction is that this would be stable. We said the carbonyl group is very stable. But this would be even more stable because the electrons would be lower in energy, right? Because you have two resonance structures here. And these electrons got stabilized by mixing with that lumo. Okay, and in fact, an amide is in fact 16 kilocalories per mole more stable than you would predict for an amine and a carbonyl that don't do this, where they don't overlap, right? And that's a quarter as big as a carbon-nitrogen bond, so it's a substantial amount of energy. Okay, another prediction. This should have a single bond, a long bond, whereas this should have a bond that's intermediate between long and shorter. So it should be shorter. And in fact, in an amide, that bond is short by 0.14 angstroms compared to a normal CN bond. The CO bond, on the other hand, should be short here, double, but longer here, intermediate. And in fact, it is longer by 0.03 angstroms. Right? Here, the nitrogen should be pyramidal. We've talked about XH3, why nitrogen should have a pyramid structure. But here, in the double bond structure, it would be flat, so that it should be planar. And indeed, it is planar, and you can see why. If you want this, these electrons to be stabilized by overlapping with pi star, they have to overlap with it. That happens when this nitrogen is all in a plane, all its bonds here. And then they can spread out and be stabilized. And it's a partial CN double bond. Whereas if this bent down, then this orbital would come out toward us and wouldn't overlap as well. Okay, so indeed in amides it is planar. So there should be, this says that's a single bond. You should rotate about it easily. This says in order to get this overlap, this has to be these things have to be parallel with one another. So you should not be able to rotate. And in fact, because it would break the overlap if you rotated it here. Right? And in fact, if you did that, there'd be no reason for this to be planar anymore. And it could come back and be rehybridized to give the most S character, as much S character as is reasonable into the unshared pair, as we talked about for NH3. Okay, and in fact, it costs 16 kilocalories to rotate that bond in an amide. And so this thing should be acidic because of the low LUMO, just the way a carbonyl group is. It should be basic also because it has that. But if they interact with one another, as shown here, then this is not as strong a base. This is not as strong an acid. It's not as low a LUMO. So it should be relatively unreactive, and it is relatively unreactive. And you know that because your skin works, right? Your skin is all these amide bonds. If it were very reactive, you'd have to be very careful about what you touched. But you don't have to be so careful about what you touch, right? Because it's more stable because of this. Okay? This is mostly opposing dipoles. There's electrons shifted from carbon to oxygen in that bond, from carbon to nitrogen in this bond. Mostly they offset each other. But to a little bit, there's a net dipole moment plus and minus to the right, adding these two together. Whereas over here, it should be strongly dipolar and in a different direction from plus to minus, perpendicular to the one below. Okay? And in fact, there's about a third of an electron transferred from nitrogen to oxygen by that mixing, right? And these things here are crucial for structural biology. The fact that it's planar, the fact there's a barrier to rotation, which is, of course, related to this, the fact that it's relatively unreactive, and the fact that the dipole moment goes in this direction, not this direction, right? And we'll go on with that next time and get on to this stuff as well. In fact, I brought this this computer with Spartan running on it. If anybody wants to say a few minutes, you can see how it works, but you don't have to, of course.